Welcome back to another episode of the Ask Investor Podcast. In each episode, we host a Q&A with another fascinating investor here on QuidRoom, the social network where private investors collaborate with one another and with global investment experts through closed-door virtual community rooms. Each episode is recorded live at a room full of investors, and the conversation continues after the recording. So if your interest is piqued after today's episode, you're never too late to join the community at quidroom.com to get your questions in. Now kick back, relax, and enjoy today's episode.
Welcome, everyone. I'm the founder of QuidRoom, the social platform where accredited investors and investment professionals globally find each other. Before we kickstart, for all the investors who are listening in to the session and the podcast, if any of your questions are unanswered or to attend future investor meetups, you can join hundreds of other investors in my personal community and QuidRoom. The invitation link is posted in here. So today we have William Ma, an active investor in the public markets of China, coming back to our Ask an Investor live session. Hi, William. How are you doing?
Hi, Pravin. I'm doing very well. You know, traveling around China, you know, good to, you know, leave from the lockdown Shanghai last time.
I know. Yeah, that's how we spoke last time. And I could see that your background is different. And interestingly, your background is quite unusual for whenever we meet. It doesn't seem like your boardroom.
Yeah. Actually, I'm traveling, you know, seeing clients in Ningbo right now. And actually in the laboratory, you know, on the ground, you know, research track, actually some of the medical equipment maker, you know, they're piling up inventory. So I think the demand from the Europe has been, you know, going down. There is one point to note, you know, for fundamental investor.
Oh, interesting. Anyways, so William, let me just do this so that I can give a bit of a background for the listeners. So last time we already had a chat about why China is the best global inflation hedge, where you had shared your thoughts from an earnings perspective, from a correlation perspective, and also from a diversification perspective. So we also spoke about politics and its future impact on the markets as well. Now, for the listeners who missed out on the previous session, I would recommend them to listen to the recording in our podcast page. The link will be posted here as well. So today, William, what we're going to do is we will be answering questions specifically in regards to China A shares, the effect of, and look a little bit on the volatility aspect of things, trading strategies, as well as also the impact of the political environment on China A shares. So let's start off with the most interesting question first. Do you think the current political environment in China is going to be complementary for investors who are inclined towards constructing an A-share portfolio in 2022?
I think the visibility is getting higher. You know, when you talk to global and local investor, you know, some of them are actually telling me, William, you know, what is the political situation and when, you know, we should wait until. And most answer, you know, people get, you know, speaking to the so-called political expert or investment expert is October. Everyone is, you know, watching and see until the October, you know, final election is being done. But from my perspective, actually, you know, some of the domestic investor or people who kind of like follow the history very closely, the August event is even more indicative and more important to watch out for. And let me explain why. You know, for every 5 years, you know, the portfolio, which is the senior executive of the Chinese government, is being re-elected, you know, kind of like the president. And then every 5 years, they will gather in a place called Beidaihe. And then they will decide, you know, who would be inside those very senior executive member in the portfolio, and then the number of member. This year, there are rumor and people talk about that the total number of council will be increased from 7 people to 9 people. The possibility is not very high. Our expectation is over 80% of the possibility is still 7 people. But in case, you know, it increased from 7 people to 9 people, that means there will be more new member and there will be more kind of like discussion much to be needed. So I think for investor, you know, closely monitoring the China political environment, the end of, you know, July, early August, where the result of the Beidaihe meeting is very indicative. If we have like 7 member portfolio member, I think, you know, between, you know, August to October, a lot of new policy will be being rolled out. We don't need to wait until the October event. So this is from the political side. I think the catalyst or the watch out signal is earlier than many people thought. We need August, not October.
Okay. So indirectly, William, are you recommending that investors should wait until the event gets over?
No, I think actually a lot of that is already kind of like reflected and priced in. I think 80% of the possibility is already seven member, hence the market kind of like recovery. The closer to the August event, I think the higher the clarity it is. So I think for investor waiting for October event, they don't have to wait until October. I would recommend they can kind of like participate the current rebound, because I think the current rebound has been very strong and there will be some positive, you know, high frequency data in June and July as well. So if that is happening, I think that will power up the equity market. So my view is you can start your position right now and wait, you know, for the second leg is at the end of July and then further deploy, and no need to wait for the October event.
Absolutely. So the August event is what we need. Let's focus a little bit more on that, right? Because it seems like it is definitely going to have an impact, but obviously 80% if it is going to be seven members, and you can take the risk about investing in the markets according to that that consideration that there is going to be a 20% risk that there might be changes. However, what is going to be very important to understand is the impact of the Chinese government and the meeting, as well as also the election in equity markets, and specifically in terms of sectoral impact as well. Mm-hmm. Where do you feel the majority of the changes are going to happen after after the meeting and elections happen this time around?
Yes, I think we are expecting a big stimulus infrastructure package. If you look at, you know, when the policy start turning more open and positive, is actually in mid-March, when the COVID, you know, situation in Shanghai is getting worse, as well as some of the economic figure, you know, coming out. But in the first phase of the easing, actually a lot of it is monetary easing, you know, rate cut, liquidity, and also less control on the real estate sector. I believe monetary part is being done. The second is regulations, if you recall, Pravin, is actually the Chinese government has announced a more friendly, you know, policy towards the internet platform company. That's why the tech sector got a good rebound in the last month or two. And then there are also policy in the new pension fund system, like 401k, you know, the China version of the pension system. And then there are also more policy in supporting the mid and small cap. And then yesterday, there are also more policy in opening up the country to global traveler. For example, historically, during the COVID, you need 14 days, you know, isolation plus 7 days, you know, kind of like quarantine, total 21 days. But yesterday it's being, you know, announced that it's shortened to 7+3. So this policy is supporting the entertainment, the travel and the hotel industry. So those impact will be filtered to the economy in the next month or two. I think the missing puzzle, the missing link, if you like, is a huge infrastructure project saying that they will spend 2 trillion, 3 trillion renminbi on those eye-catching, you know, kind of like infrastructure project in China. And I believe those will only be announced in August after the, you know, the committee confirmation that I mentioned.
Okay. All right. And you strongly feel that these are long-term changes and not short-term changes that are being implemented just before elections?
Yes, those are long-term changes. I think we have to go back to the, you know, one of the leader in China, Pravin, is called Deng Xiaoping. And he has a few, you know, management philosophy that is being implemented by the Chinese, you know, government, as well as a lot of, you know, corporate people in China. And some of them, you know, are very insightful, and that explain, at least guide me to the long-term policy of the Chinese government. They said, you know, Mr. Deng Xiaoping mentioned that managing a country is kind of like using a cooking pan to pan fry many, many small fishes. So if you turn the fishes too frequently, the small fishes, they will dissolve. They will become, you know, a mess. You should only turn the fishes when one side is cooked and then to the other side. So in Chinese, they call it 自带国于烹小心. managing a country, you cannot change your policy direction, flip-flop just like that. So that's why you see a lot of policy is 3 to 5 years kind of like time horizon.
That's a wise saying and aptly put, William. And now I'm going to go a little bit more around the policy part of things, right? So we looked into what are the positive things that are going to happen. We also looked into the election risk a little bit here. But what are the other risks that investors should consider at this point of time if they're going to take more of an exposure into China A shares?
Yes, I think there are two key risks that I suggest investors to monitor. You know, one is the debt level of the local government. Should the huge infrastructure project, you know, being announced later on this year, I think the local government, you know, need to issue more bonds, if you like. So right now, I don't think there is a lot of discussion on the local government debt, at least not on the international level. I believe, you know, down the road, the next year after, you know, whether the local government tax, they can support those local government bond would be a key risk, you know, to be watch out, you know, for investor. I think the risk on real estate sector is gone, you know, it's being controlled and then the bubble is being kind of like contained. So the next credit risk, if there is one, is to watch the local government bond. The second point is the renminbi volatility. I believe, you know, renminbi has been strengthened, you know, quite a bit, you know, in the last 2-3 months and then going down. I believe, you know, there is a potential pressure on further, you know, renminbi depreciation if, you know, US dollar strengthening. So for global investor, if they are investing in the domestic China market, I think they have to perhaps consider hedge part of the renminbi currency movement, you know, so that, you know, in real terms, they can, you know, kind of like get benefited as well.
And you mentioned the real estate risk is gone. From what I understand, there are quite a bit of distressed assets right now in the real estate market in China, right? So how would an investor be able to apply counter-cyclical strategies such as real estate residential distress investments at this time in the right manner?
Yeah, it's a very interesting area and strategy to be deployed right now in China. Because, you know, we are seeing policy reform. For example, some of the, you know, real asset, you know, you go to the court, you get processed, you can repatriate, you know, secure the property very quickly and very efficient. I think that enhanced the efficiency of this system strategy. Number two is countercyclical by nature. Given the economy slowdown last year and this year, we are seeing some mid-cap owners. They are, you know, houses pledged to the bank. They are being collected by the bank. And then the bank are selling those, you know, pledged real estate, you know, home equity to the AMC asset management company in China. And those, you know, big four AMC, they're actually selling those, you know, real estate, high quality real estate at a discount to the market. So the discount we are talking about is between 70 to 80%. And then if you do a senior subordinate kind of like tranches, you know, portfolio, actually, you know, for the non-equity related tranche, you can get 7.5 to 9.5% return for a de facto 50% loan to value on a tier one Beijing and Shanghai kind of like real estate. I don't think Beijing, Shanghai real estate, residential real estate market has a downward pressure. I would say they are quite, you know, stable. For this type of risk reward, I believe this is a good countercyclical strategy to be deployed in. And in the long run, it's inflation sensitive. So Chinese investors, Chinese people like tier one residential, you know, houses anyway.
Interesting. Now, getting a bit more technical around China A shares. So what are the black swan and volatility trading strategies in China A shares right now that can be applied?
Yes, I believe, you know, the volatility would continue to be high, not just because of the China economy recovering. I think people are getting positive. If there are more short-term number coming out, there will be a kind of like an upside. But however, we have to be, you know, cautious of global, you know, kind of like risk-off sentiment as well. You know, I think the Europe market is getting volatile, especially, you know, also on the Ukraine situation and oil price. So I believe we are seeing opportunity in a black swan strategy in China. It's a volatility trading approach strategy. Historically, this strategy was very profitable in global volatile times. For example, in Asian financial crisis, you know, or global financial crisis in, you know, 97 and 08. We are seeing this type of volatility trading being implemented in the China market. It's because the availability of the tools. In China, there is an ELN, equity linked note product called Snowball. It's not the Snowball Pravin that you go and drink, you know, in a bar, but it's a product that sell by the domestic investment bank and broker to the retail investor. They're selling, you know, put option to the retail investor. The retail investor are buying put option type of structure, you know, from the investment bank and brokers. Kind of like what is very popular, you know, in the Asian, you know, private bank market in 07. We are seeing hedge fund manager going to the brokers to collect this type of cheap volatility, cheap options, you know, from the investment bank, and then use a hedge fund trading strategy to package it. And some of the strategy, if you put it in the right rate, they can give you, you know, 50 to 100% return, you know, should the volatility, you know, pick up dramatically. So we are seeing this type of niche volatility or black swan strategy in China. Right now, the capacity is not huge because, you know, there are few players in playing that. But I think down the road, you know, when retail investor participate more, when the, you know, retail broker investment bank, they're selling more outside, this strategy could be very interesting and meaningful for global investor to hedge part of their kind of like long only exposure in China.
And right now, how are global investors, are global investors accessing it, or is it mainly domestic investors who are tapping into this?
Right now, it's mostly domestic hedge fund, you know, domestic hedge fund participating in it. We are seeing some global hedge fund set up WFI in China and apply local fund management license in China. And then they are tapping into this market. And actually, there are already channels in doing that. But I think investors didn't notice that they can also use the QFII, quota globally to set up a Cayman fund and then investing in domestic China hedge fund. They can also use, you know, this channel to tap into it. I think it's not about accessibility. It's about not people talk about it. They don't realize in China, you just don't not have to do long only. You can also do alpha strategy. You can also do counter cyclical strategy. Right now, you can even do distress and you can do volatility trading strategy.
Pretty interesting. And you would recommend that when it comes to high net worth individuals and other smaller investors in the market as well, you would usually recommend that they align with a domestic hedge fund or a foreign hedge fund who already is accessing the strategy, I assume.
Yeah, exactly. I think the domestic hedge fund, from our research, every year they're outperforming the global hedge fund investing in the China market by 5 to 8%. Okay. And that's why I think for global investor, if they can find the right partner and right channel using QFII to investing in the domestic hedge fund directly, is more kind of like profitable from my perspective.
All right. Okay, great. Now I want to talk about whatever you would be able to talk about publicly about what is there in your portfolio, because that is always interesting for people to know, you know, considering that you're one of the top investors in China that I know. So I'm very curious myself.
Sure, sure. I think we are quite fortunate, you know, at the end of last year, you know, when people are quite excited about long China, I think we have reduced, you know, some of the exposure on the equity side, and we are starting to look at strategy that create counter-cyclical, you know, strategy in the long run. And the three area, you know, we add exposure, you know, late last year, early this year, is macro, you know, China macro strategy. The second is China CTA, commodity trading advisor strategy. And then the third area we add exposure is a Chinese convertible bond strategy. So those strategy has been performing quite well year to day. You know, they are all up, you know, compared to the market, you know, down, you know, 10 to 15%. And actually starting, you know, about a month ago, since, you know, our talk, Pravin, you know, I've indicated that we are turning more positive because of the stimulus, because a lot of worst case, you know, are being priced in, you know, in the domestic China market. At the peak, some of the domestic consumption and some of the hot themes in China was down like 30 to 40%. So we see an opportunity to rotate out some of this cyclical strategy to the long only or long bias portfolio. So as of now, our equity exposure has been increased to around 60% in our portfolio. The rest 40% is those kind of like counter-cyclical strategy. And within those 60%, you know, in China, right now we are seeing a long-term theme, despite it's more being discussed, you know, globally, but locally, we are very excited about electric vehicle, about solar energy, about green energy, the ESG, the green infrastructure. The value chain of this ESG or new energy theme is huge. There are about, you know, 500 companies according to our classification. I think globally, people only see about 100 of them, you know, in the value chain. But for us, we are seeing some green energy related component maker in the value chain, which will benefit from the big infrastructure project and the money being deployed, you know, by China, you know, after August. And secondly, we are seeing some global investor, if they invest in China, they're also into this, you know, green infrastructure. So I think if you ask me, Pravin, the highest conviction for me in China, besides the alternative investment strategy, besides the distress, besides the volatility trading, I would say green infrastructure, green energy, electric vehicle supply chain, and look for the mid and small cap in those areas. Don't just look for the largest battery manufacturer, which, you know, I think you would be investing in as well. But some of the mid cap in the value chain, you know, they are the dark horse, the black horse that is going to be bought up by the market in the next 2-3 quarters.
So William, that's a very interesting topic that you brought up, because I just a few weeks ago, I interviewed another gentleman who has around more than $2 billion in AUM, and then does very active investing into the electric vehicle market space, right? So there was this one challenge that I personally felt, which is there are not many electric vehicle focused companies that are properly established and have a product like what Tesla currently has. The second is, it's an interesting topic that you brought up, because for example, if we are just focusing only on electric vehicle, so electric vehicles are completely driven with they need a lot of cameras to operate, and most of the data goes back.
And one of them is in Hong Kong, the largest one actually.
Exactly. So for example, for the political event that is happening in China, there has been a ban for Tesla cars in there, right? For example. So these are interesting things to see exactly what is going to be the future of these electric vehicles. One, other than Tesla, which is already established. And second, I assume that majority of the companies that you are doing research on in green infra are public companies.
Is public
market not, is it that big in the industry right now? Because I personally feel that majority of the companies that are doing well right now are private. So these are the two concerns that I have around that market. But please do give me a perspective around how China works.
Yeah, I think on the EV side, actually, global investor is only looking at part of the picture. They are mostly focused on the one that listed in Hong Kong or some of the ADL. They are the car manufacturer. I think those are obvious targets, but to my perspective, the value add in doing stock pick in those are quite hard because a lot of information is being priced in. So basically, you are kind of like long a theme or long a ETF. But for us, you know, active managers should look at the undercover manufacturer, the component manufacturer, you know, within the value chain. I think the camera module that you mentioned is one of the obvious targets. The one that I'm talking about is some of the, for example, the electric car charger producer. For example, some of the motor manufacturer in China, which is, you know, being kind of like being the main component sourcer for those electric vehicle, you know, producer. So those might not be the household name, and also those might not be the pure play because they also produce things for other kind of like industry. But as the EV market in China and global grow, this business unit will be repriced. So those are the dark horse that I'm talking about. And this is very common in Japan and in Korea in the 80s and 90s, right? So you have, you know, one big company, but, you know, certain component is benefiting from one subsector. And all of a sudden, people realize, oh, you are the largest maker of this subcomponent. And then we got a re-rating story. So this re-rating story requires bottom-up research. Fund manager is the 500 companies is that I'm talking about. It's not the 100 that is on the usual suspect list on everyone's, you know, radar screen. And then second is on green infrastructure. I think we are talking about similar things, if you like. You know, we got wind, we got turbine, we got solar panel manufacturer. But if you look at the supply chain of green infrastructure, it's even broader. You got the electric wire manufacturer, which they are telling us that going forward, their sector supplying to the green energy will be double or quadruple, you know, in the next year or two if the big infrastructure project is coming in. So there will be a re-rating of this type of manufacturing component maker by the market. And those are the true alpha from my perspective. By instead of just buying, you know, ETF or index fund on the big household name, you know, many people are buying right now.
Interesting. Thanks, William, for that. Now, we are almost out of time. So I'm just going to ask a conclusion question from my end. So what are the top two tips that you would provide to investors who are right now thinking about increasing their exposure into China A shares?
Yeah, the first tip is, you know, think short term and then act. Think long term and then act short term. So we think about the long term growth story, but I think you should start deploying right now instead of waiting until October. I think the August event is important, and I think the market is picking up. And then the second is, you know, be local, meaning that besides go to the mainstream electric vehicle and the new energy theme, go to the active, you know, fund manager, stock picker, who can get the re-rating story, because the risk reward in that part is very high. You know, you pick the market and sector right, and then, you know, you pick the right subcomponent, you know, alpha opportunity right. Both will, you know, give you a very good entry point. I think people are skeptical and bearish about China. Now is a good time to do a re-rating story.
That's great and aptly put, William. Well, that's it for now. It was great to host you again today. So let's make investment better by the day. For now, let's say goodbye.
Thank you so much. Happy investing. I'll go back to the factory.
Enjoy the blue hat.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Ask an Investor podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, then give us a subscribe. And if you're keen to chat with today's guest on this topic, access opportunities in the market, or just want to connect with other investors who are equally as interested in the sector, then join the guest community on QuidRoom using the link in the description. Please note that QuidRoom is only for high net worth investors and investment professionals. No retail investors are allowed. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Nothing in this episode should be interpreted as financial advice.